Bill, how you doing today?
Glenn, Michael, doing all right.
How was the bye week?
Well, it's all right. It's all right. It's good. Hopefully we've got some players healthy and give everybody a chance to, you know, rest up a little bit and we get to get on Pittsburgh.
Do you get away from it? Do you get your head away from it, stay away from football and kind of clear the mind?
You know, relative to a regular week, it's certainly at a lower level than that, yeah.
But, you know, you can't. Can you get away from it completely? Is there ever a time when you can just walk away from this thing during the course of the season?
Well, I mean, there's always things going on, but it's certainly not the same as a regular season week. So I'll take it. Yeah. I'll take it.
You know, we were talking about some of the things off the top in the first hour of the show, and one of them was the performance of Tim Tebow yesterday. Not a great... maybe 53 minutes. Glenn says not 55 minutes, but he came through in the end. And I know you guys, you had dinner with him in 2009, and there was some speculation, hey, maybe the Patriots are going to draft him. One, I wonder, what do you look for to judge a quarterback like Tebow? He's an unusual guy. And two, did you ever think of seriously drafting him? I didn't think you drafted him in the first round, but was it a deep consideration of bringing him to the Patriots?
Well, we evaluate all the players, so I think everybody we evaluate, there's some circumstance, some situation, some scenario that possibly could work, you know. So I evaluate quarterbacks. I mean, it's certainly a very unscientific way to do it, but, you know, accuracy is important. Managing the game is important. Production and winning, doing the right things to help your team win are important. So, and decision-making is important. So how you, in the end, come up with all those, there's a lot of factors, a lot of things go into them. But I think if a player can do those things, if he can make good decisions, if he can throw the ball accurately, if he can manage a team both in the huddle and in end-of-game situations, things like that, then it's a good place to start.
You know, and you think about it, you know, at college, he didn't always do those things well, but he did winning very well. Can you, at this level, can you get by some of your shortcomings? Let's say one of your shortcomings is accuracy, and your team wins. I mean, do you just say, well, the team wins, so this other stuff, I usually want it, but the team seems to respond to this guy. We got to pay attention to him.
Well, I don't think you can lose sight of the fact that players improve, and there are a lot of players that come into the league as rookies that aren't all that good, but by the time they play in their second, third, fourth year, whatever it is, you're not really looking at the same player. I mean, you are, but you aren't. So how much a player improves, a lot of the guys that are undrafted players and don't come in, and some of them make teams, and some of them are overlooked, and others just improve and become better players than what they were when they were being evaluated in college. If you go back and look at some of those college films of some of the players that are playing now that weren't big draft choices, some of them weren't all that good in college, but for whatever set of circumstances, reasons, their game has improved or changed or been upgraded or been in a different system that allows it to flourish. That's, you see a different player. So, you know, there's a lot of unknown factors you have to try to plug into that equation.
When you send the guys away for 4 days like this, you're doing it in the middle of the season. They have been in a regiment. Do you have a set speech before they go away as to what you're expecting from them in the 4 days? And I'm not just talking about the conditioning, but, you know, we're in the day and age, and we've talked about it many times, the tweeting world, the Facebook world, the social media world, where everything gets out there right now for some reason. Nobody can, that is a celebrity, can live a private life. Do you get into any of that stuff with any of these guys?
Well, Glenn, we talk to the players every day, so there's a lot of different things that get said or try to give them some direction and guidance on. Certainly what we're looking for, what we want them to do, I think that's always important. I mean, you don't want your players, you know, in a rudderless ship, so to speak. You know, here's what we think you should do. Here's what we want you to do. This is what we expect when you get back. Here's some things for you to work on. Here's some things for you to think about. I mean, sure, you know, we do that. Change is not the same for every player. But, yeah, we try to give them direction. We try to coach them. That's what we're getting paid for.
Is it a little bit more difficult with all this, and I know you're not a big fan, is it more difficult now with all the social media that's out there?
No, I don't know. I mean, I don't know enough about social media, so I don't really...
Would you call it one time my face or something like that? Was it?
Yeah, is that what it is?
I don't know. I would just think it's more difficult in that before you kind of knew what the media were. They were there, you knew what they were, and you knew the obstacles that they provided. Now it's kind of like, it's a wild world out there. You know, it's much, much different that everything seems to get out. Anybody can broadcast anything they want on their own.
Yeah, well, that's the world we live in, so yeah. Welcome to it. That's not a new story. I mean, it's been like that for a while, so.
I think Glenn's talking about himself.
Cell phone cameras, videos. I mean, you know, that's the way it is. So that's the world we all live in. You live in it, too.
That's what he's talking about. He's talking about himself when he says, you know, celebrities can't be themselves anymore. He's really... giving you a commentary on
it. It's a lot different. I mean, we've talked about it. We've talked about players, and you got players who will go out there and they'll tweet and they'll tell some things that probably you don't want, communicated out there. It's just, that's why I asked the question, how forceful can you be? How can you sit down and say to them, hey guys, this is the behavior that we expect. We're a unit. We're a team. I guess, like anything else, a lot of them probably listen and respond, and some others maybe not as well, right?
Well, we definitely talk about team building. We talk about things that are important to the football team. We talk about, you know, the way that we want to have respect for each other and respect for the team and respect for the organization that we're all a part of. So, yeah, certainly we talk about those things, you know, on a regular basis. Each situation's different. Every decision we make is different relative to where we are, what we're doing, and so forth. But there's a big picture there that we try to emphasize and keep in mind. I think that's the right thing to do. I really do. So, like, to not talk about it, not say anything about it, and hope everything comes out the way you want it to, I don't think your chances are very good that it will.
You know, I'm amazed by, Bill, your next opponent. I mean, you've coached against Chuck Knoll. You've coached against Bill Cowher and Mike Tomlin, and the Steelers, even though they've had some ups and downs and toward the end for Chuck before he turned it over to Bill Cowher, there's some down years. But pretty much, I'm amazed that this team pretty much runs the same stuff and has the same identity that it had in the late 80s and mid 90s. Is that remarkable to you that a team can keep that going? It's not like Chuck Knoll said, okay, Bill Cowher, you're my handpicked guy, and Bill Cowher said, Mike Tomlin, you're my handpicked guy, and they had the same continuum. They still kind of do the same thing, even though they're from different schools, so to speak.
Well, I think a lot of the carryover defensively came after Chuck left, you know, where they were more of a 4-3 team, and then Bill Cowher came in and brought in his system and Dick LeBeau's system, and that's been pretty consistent since 1992. So you're talking 20 years of I don't see a lot of changes to the playbook. Offensively, I think it's a little different story, but they still have a general way that they play the game that's pretty consistent, and they've definitely changed it in the kicking game depending on who their special teams coordinators were and who their coach was. So you see some changes there, but defensively their system has been continuous, whether from Kevin Green to Harrison to, you're right down the line, you know, Jason Gilden or whoever it's been.
Greg Lloyd.
You change the names, but what they do is the same, and there are other various positions. But, you know, offensively, it's changed a little bit. I mean, you can't run the same offense. You wouldn't want to run the same offense with Cordell Stewart that you run with Roethlisberger. I mean, that wouldn't make any sense either. So they've made some modifications. I think any coach would do that. If Bill Cowher had both players, if Mike Tomlin had both players over the course of their career, if whatever it was, you know, I think that they would you'd modify things to do what your player, particularly that position, is good at and what you want him to do. So, but, you know, Dick Hoke, who was the running back coach for Chuck, and through Bill and even part of Mike's tenure, there's certainly a lot of carryover in the running game, and they've had a great running game for years and years, going back to Perry Foster and you know, you go right down the line on that too. Yeah,
but still, yeah, a lot of production.
So, different types of backs, but they've been productive, and you know they've got another good group of backs now. So you got to give them a lot of credit that they've been able to do what they want to do. But I mean, to a certain degree, you could say that about Oakland. You know, it's another team like that that's obviously not had as much success, but they've tried to maintain the philosophy of their overall system over the last, you know, 20-some years or so.
Would you say that defensively, you mentioned that there's, you know, pretty much the same system in the last 20 years. Would you say it's complex and it's part of the difficulty is figuring out what they're trying to do, or is it that you know what they're going to do, but the execution level is so high it is really difficult to deal with?
Well, I think it starts at the top. It starts with the coaching, with LeBeau and Cowher and Tomlin and the guys who have been running the system. So they have a good system. It has good breadth to it. They can handle a lot of different things, and they know how to put pressure on the offense and how to defend the things that they want to defend. So I think they've done a good job of that. They've also obviously done a good job acquiring players and having players that can make plays and put them in good positions to do that. So, you know, to be able to withstand all the changes that we've seen on the offensive side of the ball over that period of time, I think it says a lot for the fact that their system, that they've been able to hold it intact and be so successful with it.
How different is it to game plan for a Roethlisberger, and that he's got a unique skill set? I mean, he stays upright. You try to bring him down. And even now, Bill, when they're blowing the whistle early, trying to protect the quarterback, he still seems to get a longer whistle out there. He didn't get the long whistle on a couple plays yesterday, but there are a lot of games he'll get. How is he? Because he seems to be unique. You don't see an awful lot of guys do what he does. How difficult is that to game plan on him?
Well, it's not hard to game plan. It's just hard to get him down.
Yeah.
I mean, you know where he is, and you know what he's trying to do. It's just a question of whether you can actually get your arms around him and get him on the turf, and that's not easy. He's a big, strong guy and can throw the ball and does a good job getting his eyes down the field, even though people are hanging all over him. He looks downfield and can find open receivers and has enough arm strength and leg strength to stay on his feet and throw it. So that's a different challenge than guys that run around, the Cam Newtons or the Michael Vicks that we'll see later in the season. With Vick, he keeps plays alive in a different way, but he keeps them alive. And then you have a lot of other good quarterbacks like the Philip Rivers and Peyton Mannings and guys like that are, you know, great passers that, you know, they have their own style of play. So, you know, every week's a different challenge. Each team's got their own style of play. They've got their own great players, and those players have styles that are unique to them that you have to be able to defend.
Do you deal differently with your defensive players in that the play isn't over until he is finally down, especially when you're dealing with that fine line now of the new rules where if you beat up the quarterback at all, man, they're gonna nail you for 15 yards.
Well, sure, I think, of course, you have to, and you're dealing with a guy that's, you know, unlike a lot of other players that you play against. I think you have to deal with him differently. I think the players need to understand what the challenges are, how best to deal with them, and try to do that in game conditions. So it's definitely a challenge.
What's it like playing there in Pittsburgh? I mean, I know they talk a lot about the toughest stadium in the league to kick at. It's especially, I think it's the open end of the stadium that's difficult. But just your experiences, you've been there many times with several teams. What's been your experience playing in Pittsburgh?
Well, it's a lot easier to play there when you're playing well.
I was going to say, you've had a lot of success there.
Yeah, so, right. I mean, we've had our moments. When we've played well, we've been able to get control of the game and play well. When we haven't, the Halloween game back in, what was it, 04?
04, yeah.
Yeah. Throw a lot of interceptions, give up big plays on defense, give up plays in the kicking game. It didn't go so well. So,
do you factor in that? They always talk about that stat with the kicking in that stadium. Do you factor that in? Is it as difficult as they want you to think it is? Because I'm sure that works to their advantage. It's a little bit of a mind game.
Yeah. I think every game you go into, you have an idea of what you're going to get, and then in pregame warmups, you make that final determination with myself, Scott O'Brien, and Steve and Zoltan with the kickers about what the range is, what direction, if we're going this way, what we're doing, if we're going that way, what we're doing, how much of a factor is the crosswind, how much of a factor is the headwind or the tailwind, whatever it is, and kind of set your parameters that way. And it's that way for every game, whether it's in Gillette Stadium or Pittsburgh, Heinz Field, or wherever we play. You know, obviously in a dome, you take that factor out of it. It's just really distance related, but you still have to consider all those things in any outdoor stadium. And they change. They change from one end of the field to the other, and they change from week to week. So it's always part of the game.
I guess that's an advantage of having a bad weather kicker. You know, a guy who can, whether it's in New England, New York, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Cincinnati, you know, you're going to have your challenges in each stadium. A little different, but they're all bad weather cities. So if you've got that experience, you should be all right.
Yeah, well, I think what you want is a good kicker. And if you have a good kicker, then, you know, kickers they have to deal with the elements, whatever they are. Yeah. The elements, the pressure, the, you know, all the things that they have to, it goes into their job. And if you have a good one, then it's going to make more than guys who aren't as good as him. So.
90-second break. We'll be right back with the coach here live down at Gillette Stadium. Back down here at Gillette Stadium. It's Patriots Monday. We're talking our weekly get-together with the coach, Bill Belichick. When you get time off like this, and it's this early in the season, does this afford you the opportunity to maybe add a little bit more? I know you're constantly adding stuff into the game plan, but is this a period where maybe you've got a little bit more time to try and open up some of the things you want to do out there?
I mean, I don't think a lot, no. I think it's probably just part of the normal, you know, the normal putting another couple rocks on the pile. You know, you're a little further into the season, you put in something that plays off something that you've done before, or a situation that comes up that you want to handle a little bit differently, or have another way to handle it. Maybe you have one way to handle it, you've used that, and now you want another one. But I don't think this is really what you want to add a lot of stuff to the playbook. Just hopefully try to do the things that you're doing well, keep those going, and the things you're not doing so well, see if you can find a way to do those better or eliminate them or something. And try to get your guys back healthy and get your execution level higher. I think it's more about execution than putting in a lot of new stuff.
Now, speaking of health, what's the status of Kevin Faulk? He's on the PUP list. Now he's talking about practicing.
Well, he did practice. He practiced last week.
Now, how's he doing? How's he looked in practice?
Well, he practiced last week, so that's definitely a good start. We'll obviously ramp it up a little bit this week. Last week's practice will probably not quite to the level that this week's will be. At least I hope not. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes this week. But it was good to have Kevin out there, Brandon Dederick, and of course Ron Brace. So we had all of them out there. We'll see. You know, maybe Marcus Cannon will be able to get out there soon too. So we'll see how that goes. But it's good to see those guys out there. How it'll go for them this week, what their role will be, whether they'll be able to play or be active or whatever. We'll just have to take that day by day.
You mentioned Marcus Cannon, fifth-round pick. He found out about non-Hodgkin's lymphoma at the combine. How's he doing, forget about football-wise, how's he doing physically?
Good. I think he's doing good. You know, he's had you know, some things he's had to do, and you know, those have gone along. So we'll see where that puts him. What that time frame is, this is kind of when he's ready, you know. We don't want anything to come before his physical health and what he needs to do. So when we get the green light, then we'll proceed from there.
And he's a big man, isn't he? I mean,
yeah, sure is. 350
pounder, legit, 350, 360.
Yeah.
And not a real big. I'm not looking at you like you're 350 pounds.
Thank you.
But a solid.
Yeah, no, it's not a sloppy three. Right. He's a good athlete, and you know, he's definitely been able to do some things here. You know, in between some of his treatments and things that he's done, but you know, his strength levels, his conditioning, his overall movement skills, and all that have been, you know, impressive for his size. We'll see how all that translates into the football field and experience and plays and so forth, if and when that happens. But it's definitely encouraging. And most importantly, I hope it happens for him because he's worked hard. I know it's important to him, and I hope that things clear up so he gets that opportunity. But we'll just take it day by day and see how it goes.
How different is that, monitoring a guy, you know, might have a broken bone or a pulled muscle or something, as opposed to a guy that was dealing with a serious illness? Apparently he's getting behind it right now. How different is it monitoring something like that when you know you can maybe play a little bit?
Well, I mean, honestly, Glenn, I don't monitor it personally. I mean, that's, I do it through our medical staff, and it's different, but in a way, it's not really different. You know, if a player's clear to play, where it's a foot, an ankle, some condition like this, whatever it is, a concussion, whatever it happens to be, when that player's cleared by the medical department, then it becomes a football decision. Until he's cleared by the medical department, there's no football to talk about. It's a medical situation. So, look, none of us want to take any chances. Everybody, you know, there's nothing more important to a football team than the health of its players. Without healthy players, you have no team. So, you know, that comes first. But whatever the injury is or whatever the situation is, you know, we want to try to address it and do the best we can to get it cleared up as quickly as possible so that the player can get back on the field and contribute. And that's what the players want. So when that happens, it happens. If it's not able to happen, then we go on with whatever the other options are, and we have other players. That's why we have 53 players plus all the practice squad players on our rosters to have that depth, and we all know we'll need it sooner or later.
I want to ask you about Chad Johnson's Ocho Cinco, whatever name we go with, number 85. He has 9 catches.
That would be Ocho Cinco, 85.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Your knowledge, your mastery of Spanish is very important. It's very impressive.
Just want to interpret for
yeah.
you.
He has 9 catches so far. Do you feel like, and I know numbers can be twisted and dissected in any kind of ways, do you feel like that he has an understanding of the offense? As you're coming out of this bye week, is that issue off the table now, that he knows all the nuances of the offense he's supposed to be running?
Well, I think at this point he has a good understanding of the offense. But, you know, again, Michael, as you know, we change our offensive game plan a little bit from week to week. So it's not like we're going to run the same plays necessarily this week that we ran last week or the week before or the week before. So, no, it's always a little bit of a fluid situation for all of our players, offensively, defensively, to adjust and adapt to either the same plays against different looks, or in some cases, I don't want to say new plays, but plays that we didn't run last week. They're plays that we've run before, but maybe we haven't run them in 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whenever the last situation came up that was similar to this one or applicable to this, to the one that we're currently in. So that's... You know, I think really most, you know, all of our players are pretty much in that boat.
Let me ask a question about 92 then, Albert Haynesworth. Has any of this been a conditioning problem? Because he has had some injury problems or whatever. He hasn't been out there an awful lot in the field. Seemed to be out there a little bit more last week, but I believe you had him in sub packages as a rusher out there. Do you sense that he can be out there a lot more than we've seen him to this point, Bill?
I wouldn't say that conditioning per se is a problem. I mean, he came in and passed the conditioning test, when he got here. So that really wasn't a problem. The problem really has been the fact that he's missed some time on the field, which has affected his conditioning because he hasn't been able to go out there and participate. And he missed whatever it was, 3 weeks there or 2 weeks after the San Diego game, whatever it was. So, you know, there have been a couple setbacks there from a opportunity to practice and condition standpoint, but I wouldn't say that it's a conditioning issue. I would just say that the time he's missed has limited his opportunities to be out there on the field practicing and getting more game ready, which everybody needs.
Do you project him to be out there a lot more if he obviously gets that conditioning?
I don't know. We'll put the players out there every week that we feel that, you know, give us the best chance to win, whoever that is, depending on our scheme, who we're playing, what we're doing, how the players perform. So, I can't really answer that.
You look at your team, you're 5-1, pretty good shape. But with those two players in particular, are you satisfied with what they've given you so far?
Yeah, I think they both worked hard, and I think they both tried to adapt to systems that are significantly different than the ones that they were used to. And, I think they put a lot into it, and I think that they've gotten better. So, what exactly that'll be going forward, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But I don't have any issues with what they've what they've tried to do, no.
Do you do this? Do you evaluate, and I know you probably evaluate your team every week, but are there certain periods of the season, whether you break it into quarters or whatever, in which you're expecting your team to be at this level? You know at the beginning of the year where you believe the team can be, and now you're kind of figuring out, have they reached the level that I want them to be at each one of the polls?
Yeah, honestly, I really don't look at it that way. I really don't see it that way. Because I don't know what level the team's going to be at. What I do know is where we're at, and then based on that, we try to project where we can improve. How do we get better? And I think that's really what the name of the game is to take all of our practice opportunities and our meetings and our walkthroughs and all the things we do and do it with the intent of preparing, obviously, for our opponent, but getting better, doing things better that we're not doing as well as we need to do in whatever those areas happen to be as it pertains to our next opponent. So, where are we in September? Well, we're not where we're going to be in October or November. At least I hope not. Otherwise, we're wasting a lot of practices. Or December. So, but where are we, on September 15th? Well, hopefully we're further when we were on September 13th. Hopefully on October 1st, we're ahead of where we were on September 15th. And I think that's kind of the way we try to approach it all year long. Where were we in the Dallas game? Well, we felt like coming off the two practices we had in the bye week that we were a better football team than we were when we played Dallas. We took on some new situations. We went over some things. We addressed them. We tried to improve in some areas. We watched tape on it. We practiced it. I think the players have a better understanding of it. I think we're coaching it better. I think we've improved there. But, we'll see when we play Pittsburgh. So you just try to keep improving each day. But I think it's hard to say, well, this is where we're going to be at such a point. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how you measure that. I just know where we are and what we've done. And in some cases, it's been okay. In other cases, it needs to be better, and we need to work on it harder.
Obviously, if you didn't think, for the most part in your career, if you didn't think a team had a chance to win a championship, that would kind of take a lot of fun out of what you're doing. But based on what you just said, have you ever had a team, whether it was here or with the Giants, have you ever had a team win a championship and it kind of exceeded that level of improvement, kind of exceeded where you thought it would be? And they kind of sneak up on you at all and say, damn, I didn't realize this team had that much improvement in it.
Well, I think the 0-1 team was certainly an interesting team. I mean, we were sitting there at 4-4, halfway through the season. And I don't know if that looked like a championship team at that point, but, kept getting better. And, and then, sometimes you just kind of hit your stride. I mean, the 86 Giants team was kind of like that too. Halfway through the season, we were, I forget what it was, maybe like 5-3 or something like that. But then after that, it just, the team changed, and it was, I don't want to say unbeatable, but we walked into every game, and it was funny. We had our reunion there. We had our 25th year reunion this summer. And a couple people made the comment at the reunion in that season that you walked onto the field, in the last few games in the playoffs. You knew you were going to win. You just weren't quite sure how it was going to be that day. Was it going to be a shutout? Or were we going to score 30 points? Or were we going to run the ball for 190 yards? Or were we going to, were we going to get sacks? Or were we going to get interceptions? But you just knew that you had – the way your team was playing, you just felt like, we're going to go out there and win today. We've got a really good team. I don't know exactly how we're going to do it, but we know we're going to go out there and win. And, and that's a great feeling to have, but we certainly didn't have that feeling on that 86 team, in the middle of November, or I'd say in the middle of October for sure. By the middle of November, it was building. By the 1st of December, I think we all felt like this team's going to be really hard to beat. And, certainly in the 0-1 season, we were sitting there halfway through. I mean, we didn't even know we were going to be in the playoffs. I mean, we were, that was the horse race video where we had those 14 horses within 5 lengths of the leader as they came to the final turn in the what's the race up there at Saratoga?
Was it the Preakness?
No, it was... No. The Breeders' Cup. And the Breeders' Cup, and we said, this is the way it is. Here's the standings. Here's all the teams that are in it. If if the race finished today, these teams would make it, these teams wouldn't, but there's still five games to go. So, you know, don't worry about that. And but that's how close it was, because I remember that very vividly that year. So
I don't know as a coach whether you ever felt encouraged with a loss. But after that loss to the Rams,
yeah.
I felt encouraged. I felt that the team had made some strides forward. Did you during that? Do you ever feel that way with a loss?
Well, I think when we look back at that particular game, I think one of the things I took out of it was just, you know, from a coaching standpoint, you know, I just didn't do a good job. We felt like the way to beat them was to disrupt the passing game, to pressure them, and we pressured, I don't know, 40-some times. We ran some type of extra linebacker, extra defensive back, and we felt that we could throw the rhythm of the passing game off and challenge the protection and all that, and we just didn't do it. And looking back on it and getting ready for the Super Bowl to play that team again, we said, we don't, you know, we're not going this way. We're not, like, to blitz these guys is not the way to go. They're too good. They pick it up well. They get the ball out too quickly. They got too many weapons. We just can't blitz these guys, you know, all day. And we thought that would be a good strategy. And I felt that at the time. And I told the team that at the time. And then when we played them, you know, for the Super Bowl, the first thing I told the team was, hey, fellas, we're not doing this again, okay? We picked a strategy to play in the first time, but that was the wrong strategy. And we are not doing that again. We're going to jam Marshall Faulk. We're not going to let him release out of the backfield. We're going to make it tough for him to get into the pattern. You know, we're going to hit these receivers. We're not blitzing every down. You can forget about that. I'm not doing that again. So, you know, can you learn from those? You know, sure. And you know what? Maybe it isn't sometimes even the strategy. Maybe it's just the way it's for your team. You know, one team has success doing that. Your team, maybe you're better off playing a little different way. And sometimes you find out those things about your team as the season goes along. So, you know, again, that's part of our job as coaches, is to try to figure out how to get the most out of this team. You know, what strategy, what, you know, personnel groupings, what combinations work best for us. And we've spent a lot of time talking about that and looking at that. Hopefully we can, you know, get our most productive people out there on the field and give our players the best chance to win.
See, a 25-year reunion for the Giants makes sense. It's a 10-year reunion now for that Patriots team. When is a good time to have a reunion? 10 years, 15, 20, 25?
Well, I don't know. I think the 25-year reunion was good for that particular team. You know, and there was a lot of guys that, I mean, obviously Pepper and I see each other every day. I mean, you know, things like that are great, but there's a lot of us that hadn't seen each other in 25 years, and it was good to get together and come back and do it the way they did it. It was very well done by the Giants and Harry Carson, who organized it.
He looks the same, by the way.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
He looks unbelievable.
All those guys do. I mean, that whole Lawrence, Carl Banks, Pepper, Harry Carson, I mean, those guys all look like Mark Bavaro. They all look like they could line up and play right now.
Carl, why isn't Carl Banks coaching? I listen to him sometimes, and I think, wow, he's really a smart guy.
I'm sure he could be if he – But
likes the cushy gig of doing the radio more.
Well, you know, Carl's very good with his finances, too. So I'm sure that, you know, he sees the pay scale, that what he gets doing what you get, and then what he gets coaching, and so yeah. –
In other words, he doesn't want to take the loss in pay. That's, right. That's what he's trying to say.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're fortunate. Very, very bright group of linebackers there. I mean, you had all those guys you mentioned.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sims, I mean, you know, it looks to me like he could go out there and still throw, you know, if he had to. I mean, it's an impressive team. So, yeah, 25 years was a great time to get together. You know, as Harry said, you know, if we do a 50, it won't look like this. And he's right. You know, unfortunately, that's the way it is. So, you know, when's the last time you can get everybody together kind of like the way it was? You know, that was probably about the right time.
All right, good luck in Pittsburgh on Sunday. We'll see you back here on Monday.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Glenn. Michael, have a good week.
Bill Belichick right here on The Big Show. Quick break, and we're right back at you.